Guys, welcome back to another episode of The Pulse. We've got another great guest doing big things, using her voice for good and so much more, which is what we love to do here on The Pulse. Comedian, actor, author, you got all kinds of titles. Tig Notaro, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Which of those titles work? They all work, right?
They all work. I mean, I feel like a comedian and podcaster mostly. And then I, you know, end up in some acting gigs and TV and film. And I don't know if real actors would be like, oh, yeah, she's an actor, but I do it.
So real actors. I was talking to my producer, Ivana, when she scheduled the interview. And I had just gotten back from vacation. And she was like, we got Tig Notaro. And I was like, oh, cool. And then said that I had just on the plane, one way there, I watched, what did I watch? We Have a Ghost, which was your movie. And then on the way back, I watched Your Place or Mine. And had no idea that we had you booked. Those were just two movies I selected. So sounds like actor.
Well, I mean, in those cases, yeah. I was in a movie. But I'm not going to tell Meryl Streep I'm an actor, you know. I'm not going to look her in the eye and say, yeah, I'm an actor. You should see my stuff.
So my other, I'm going to call you actor because that's like, wow, I only watched two movies going back and forth to vacation. And they were both you. So we'll go with it. I was also excited when she said, we have booked Tig Notaro for the show, until I saw an interview you did with Stephen Colbert. And you were explaining how your agent or friend or someone used to get upset with you because you say yes to everything.
Yeah, you can't be too flattered having me on here. No, that was all my work. Interviews are work, I guess, but TV and film and all these different offers that would come in, I'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds fun. I'll do that. And my old manager, she called me and said, do you need money? Are you broke? It's like, no, why? And she said, well, you take everything. And I was like, well, I get cool offers, you know?
All right. So then I can be excited that you said yes.
This wasn't one of those. Yeah. This is a cool offer.
Okay. Fair enough. I appreciate that. How did you get, let's go back a little bit. Mm-hmm. How did you get started in comedy?
Well, I was always obsessed with it. I followed stand up. I bought albums and went to shows. And then when I moved to LA, with some friends, I saw that there was an opportunity to do stand up in coffee shops, bars, clubs, laundromats. I mean, you could get on and, you know, stage in quotes, so many different places. And it was just secretly a dream that I had always wanted to do. So I did it. I tried it and became instantly obsessed, and now I'm 26 years in. But I started at open mics and just worked my way through the clubs.
I feel like you guys who do this are just a special breed. We've had a couple comedians on who have talked about, you know, Michael Blackson was working at Domino's delivering pizza, and someone said you should do an open mic. You know, Cedric the Entertainer said a similar situation. And I can't imagine if someone said to me, you should go do an open mic. I go, okay, let's go do it. That's just born into you?
I mean, well, nobody told me to go do an open mic. I just knew that when I was looking through the LA Weekly, when I first moved to town, that's where I had to go. And it just was never in my orbit, the open mic scene. But moving to Los Angeles, there was just a lot of opportunity. And but yeah, it does seem like an odd thing if you're not on that trajectory for someone to suggest it and then you go try it. But I guess that does happen.
Yeah, I guess. Somebody said it to me, I'd be like, yeah, no. I'm going to pass on that, but I guess that's why you have the career and I don't. So you have been doing the stand-up for years now.
26 years.
Okay. When, at what point, it's always been the stand-up, that's still your first love?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I do really enjoy podcasting, but yeah, stand-up.
So what was, you were doing the open mics, performing everywhere. What was the big break?
Well, you know, it's kind of, people don't necessarily believe this, but it's, there's so many different big breaks. To me, my biggest break was getting on stage and doing an open mic. I couldn't believe I was actually doing that. It was such a dream in my life. And to have that opportunity and be on a stage for 3 minutes, trying it out, that was the biggest break I could get because it was the beginning. And then, you know, Zach Galifianakis, you know, that was a break. He had his own TV show. He had me come on there and, you know, a booking agent saw me in a club and told somebody else. And then I got booked all around the country and it all kind of escalated. And then I had a very big moment in 2012 when I had cancer and my mother had died. I had an intestinal disease. I had pneumonia. My girlfriend and I broke up. It was all in 4 months. And I did that. I talked about it on stage and that exploded and became like the number one selling comedy album in the world that year. And so a lot of different levels of breaks that I've gotten.
Well, and we were going to talk about 2012, but I'm sure I'm not the first person who said to you that all of those things that you just listed, they don't sound very funny.
No, they weren't.
And then, but that was stuff that you decided to use as material up on stage. Why did you decide to be that open?
Well, I had just watched my mother die unexpectedly, and I had three potentially deadly illnesses simultaneously, and I didn't know what my outcome was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I knew that this was going to be the last show I was going to do before I went away and had surgery and got treatment and just took some downtime to recover emotionally from everything I'd just been through. And so I thought I would love stand up, like we just discussed. It's my first love. And so I was going to miss it. And I wanted to do another show before I went away and healed. And I just thought I can't really bring myself to go on stage and talk about just the minutiae of day-to-day life or old jokes of mine that I had done many times. I just felt like I'm going to go ahead and get on stage and try and share my experience and find some humor in it. And I didn't know if I was going to be able to. It could have gone very differently.
Yeah. In 2012, you walked on, I have it written down, you walked on stage and said, hello, good evening, I have cancer. Mm-hmm. And that's what started that. Yeah. How did that kind of proceed? Because I think in that moment, you're kind of like, okay, how are people going to respond to this? And you said it became this huge thing of people embracing the openness and, you know, your ability to kind of work through it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very mixed reactions of people nervously laughing, people mouth agape, like what is happening? There were some people crying, but I had come up with that opening line of, hello, good evening. I have cancer. How are you doing tonight? I came up with that in my shower that night before I walked on stage, and I was maniacally laughing, thinking, oh my God, that is the craziest intro. And then I thought, I have to do it, especially because I'm laughing this hard about it. And then I had this fear of, oh gosh, what if I offend people? What if somebody in the audience has cancer? And then I was like, oh wait, I have cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my story. And so I just thought, it's important to have a good way in, a good opener, and I thought that was a good opener to deliver it to the best of my ability, like how people deliver, like, good evening, any birthdays tonight, how's everyone doing, you know. I was trying to deliver it like that, because I didn't know how to get into the material that was so dark and bleak.
Why do you think it resonated with people so much? Like you said, it became the number one, recording that year. Why do you think so many people, was it just the honesty, the openness, the strength? Like, I don't know.
Well, it is a mystery, but I think there's a lot of different elements, and one is it reminds me of reality shows, how people like to watch things as they're going down, dramatic unfolding of events, and you're a fly on the wall. I think that there's something appealing about that. I think it's also really, I was on a wire. I did not know how it was going to go. People didn't know how it was going to go. I also think that the material touched on so many things that people relate to, and everyone knows somebody that's been touched by cancer, love, loss of a loved one, a parent, a romantic breakup. There was so much in there that people could connect with. And so I think that it was, you know, when I say it makes sense, people latched on, but that makes it sound like I think I'm so good that of course people liked it, but I was shocked that people were into it. I was hesitant to release that as an album.
Did you, so after that, like you were always, and I went back and looked at some of your stand up pre, kind of that moment. And you were always willing to take risks and talk about, some of the tiptoeing up to lines of things, and talk about that. After that point, it seemed like it became much more personal. So did that kind of change the way you viewed comedy? I mean, you talked about that. You obviously, there's a t-shirt on your website right now when you appeared on stage after a double mastectomy, topless. You then did a series of kind of dealing with your mother's passing, and you know all this because you did it. But it did it turn. I'm giving you a recap of your career.
Listen up.
Did it turn to a more personal kind of comedy?
Well, I think at that time I was really going through a lot, and having such a positive response from audience members to my own feeling of, wow, I really broke through some walls here that I hadn't normally done to that degree. And so I definitely explored it in the show One Mississippi, and in my other stand up. But I'm also at a point now, it's been 11 years since that happened, and I feel like it was just another stepping stone and growth in my process and career, because I've had all sorts of changes where I did one-liners to storytelling to musical comedy to very personal dark comedy, and now I feel like I just want to do what makes me happy in the moment, and if it's dark, then I'll go dark, and if it's nonsense, I'll do nonsense. I don't want to be any particular thing. But if somebody wants to call me any particular thing, that's their business. But what I'm gonna do is what feels right in those moments.
You said that when you started this, it was like a dream, and just getting on stage was the big break. And now, 26 years later, you still love it?
I do. I did just come off of a huge, I mean, nearly 80 city tour, and I'm very excited to be home. I'm very excited to be home.
But you're going back out again. I mean, you're in a week.
Yeah, well, actually, I leave Friday. Next week I'll be doing shows again. But I have been home for weeks, and that has not happened in a long time.
But you still love doing it.
I do.
So what's next? You said you're not an actor, you're on tour, you're doing the podcast. I've seen you in 50 movies and Star Trek stuff, and
Yeah.
it's hard to say what's next to somebody who's kind of doing next right now, but what's next?
Well, I'm going to be on the new season of The Morning
I
Show
love
with
that show, by the
Jennifer.
way.
Yeah. I'm not sure when it airs yet. And I have another stand-up special that I'll be taping in Brooklyn on November 4th, I think. So I'm just going to take this time off, hang out with my family and my kids, and do some traveling, and gear up for my stand-up taping, and then,
And who
see what
knows what?
happens. Yeah, who knows?
You said you enjoy the podcasts. Why so much?
Why do I enjoy it so much?
Yeah.
It's a completely different casual way of connecting with people on the show and that listen to the show, and to be able to do comedy without having to do these structured jokes or stories. And I don't know, I started a podcast in the early days, like 15 years ago, and got back into it during the pandemic, and it feels really good to be back doing that.
Just kind of connecting with people.
Yeah, and yeah, like I said, just a less structured way of doing comedy.
I had Sarah Silverman on, who I believe is your friend.
Yes.
If not, we'll just edit that part out. But I had Sarah Silverman on, and she said something similar about the podcast. Like, it's cool to be able to interact and kind of get that direct response in the moment. Different from what you guys are used to.
Yeah, for sure.
I like it. Just a couple more things and then we will let you go. I know that you gotta pick up the kids, and so we don't want to keep you too
Yeah.
long. I was telling people before this interview that I feel like Tig Notaro would be my friend after I saw that you're not terribly into pop culture, run into celebrities and don't really recognize them. Like,
Yeah.
what happened with Anne Hathaway?
I was in Toronto for the wrap party for the Star Trek series that I was on that just finished the final season. But me and the creator and I were standing in the lobby of our hotel talking, about to go up to our rooms, and this woman came around the corner and she said, "Hi, Tig." And I looked at her and I said, "Oh," I said, "Hi." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "Were you at the Star Trek wrap party?" And she said, "No, it's me, Anne Hathaway." She said, "I met you at the Beck concert." And I was like, "Oh God, I need to just be home and not go anywhere." And I called my wife when I got to my hotel room, and I said, "You are not gonna believe." And I told her what happened, and she said, "Oh," she said, "I can't believe that Anne Hathaway tried to jog your memory by saying, 'It's me, Anne Hathaway. I met you at the Beck concert.'" And Stephanie said, "I watched you meet Anne Hathaway at the Beck concert, and I could see on your face you didn't know who she was." And she said, and my wife said, "What she should have said to you is, 'It's me, Anne Hathaway, from Anne Hathaway.'"
Yeah.
And I was like, "That's hilarious." But I had a show called Under a Rock with Tig Notaro. And
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that, but I had celebrities come on and I would try and figure out who they were.
I feel like this is the example of celebrities. They're just like us. Like, regular
Yeah.
people sit there and run into people that I know you, but I'm going to
Right.
talk longer to try to put it into context. They're just
Yeah.
normally not like superstar actors.
Right.
Pull that context. We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good. That's what we try to make this show about, and hearing what that means to people. So what does that mean to you?
What does use your voice for good mean?
Yes.
I think for me personally, I like to make sure that any step I'm taking in my career, and ways that I'm spending my time, is with some sort of positive twist to it. Just something positive. What can I find there? Because I think that it's very easy, even though we were talking and kind of, I think joking before, which I was, about taking every job. I really don't take every job, but if I do find something positive or this can be impactful in some way, then I want to be a part of that. So that's what's going on with my decision making.
I appreciate you taking the time. It's inspiring to see somebody who's been so open about so many different things and yet still smiling, still making other people laugh and smile, still enjoying it every day. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me on.
We will see you on tour for like ever.
Yeah, or on TV and film.
There you go. I'll be waiting for the next episode. Thank you so much. You have a good
one. Thank you. You too. See ya.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse podcast today with comedian, actor, and author, and motivational speaker, call her what you will, Tig Notaro. She has been through so much and manages to continue to do it with a smile, a supportive, empowering, loving smile. And I really enjoyed hearing her story, but also the strength that she brings to that story. It's encouraging. It's hard not to feel good after you talk to somebody who has faced that many challenges and yet still keeps going and encouraging other people to keep going as well. Hope you enjoyed it. I would love to hear from you on social media. Give me your feedback, questions, comments. You can always hit me up at BillAFox29 on most platforms, Bill Anderson on Facebook. You can hit subscribe. I would love to hear, or for you, excuse me, rambling, would love for you to get notification. That's the beauty of a podcast. You just keep talking. I would love for you to get notification every Monday when another episode of The Pulse comes out. So then you hit that little button that says follow, subscribe, like, whatever it is. I'm going to stop talking now, but I will leave you as I always do, reminding you whenever you can to use your voice for good. And have a good one.